Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download Stand Well Back. Listen. Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon discuss Birmingham City's new stadium plans. Is ambition off the pitch pointless if the club is sliding backwards on it? What do you need to get right first? Rangers call out Dundee as negligent and unprofessional after the match was postponed for a second time. Are Rangers engaging in bully boy tactics, or do they raise a valid argument? Elsewhere, 777 partners have pushed back their target date to complete the takeover of Everton. At what point do the Premier League say no? Plus, we look ahead to Alexander Usyk against Tyson Fury, who lock horns in May. You're listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Whichever way you look at it, Birmingham City are in trouble. And of course, historically, when they were sixth, they decided to call time on John Eustace. They brought in Wayne Rooney. That very definitely did not work. And now Gary Rowett is back in there. Gary Rowett, a guy we like immensely, but is in there on an interim basis. And even he, at the moment, can't stave off a defeat. Now, Birmingham lost to Cardiff 24 hours before that. The co-owner, Tom Wagner, decided to explain his vision for the football club, a new multi-purpose stadium, and to become the main team in England's second biggest city. St Andrews right now holds 30,000. They're looking to build not only a near 60,000 multi-purpose stadium, but a sports quarter that will house training facilities for men's, women's and academy teams as well. It'll have the lot, as Tom Wagner explained to our own Tom Ross.
You know, we're referring to it as a sports quarter because ultimately what we're developing is something that's more than just a stadium. The stadium's the center of it. It's the heart of it. But, you know, we'll incorporate men's and women's and academy training ground. So a full performance center there. We'll incorporate ideally office space, other entertainment options, hotel, so that it becomes a destination for people 365 days a year. That's the responsible thing to do for the community. It's a responsible thing to do for the club because all those revenues go into the club, and it's a responsible thing for us to do environmentally because we're creating a venue that's used more than just 30 days a year.
When you say entertainment, you're talking pop concerts, that sort of stuff?
Oh, all of that. I mean, I think, if we're able to get everything that we want, we could have, the world's largest concerts, held in the venue. We could have the ability to host Euro matches, World Cup matches, NFL games. You know, all of those things are in the sphere of our objectives and what we'd like to accomplish with respect to this development. And I think it's something that's worthy of pursuit because Birmingham sits at the center of England. Right, it'll be easily accessible following the completion of HS2 and coupled with the existing rail infrastructure. This will be a venue that'll be easy for people to get to. And every part of our planning is focused on how we create a venue that is easy to get to, easy to enjoy when you're there, and then easy to go home from. Obviously, we have to think about it in the context of what's appropriate for our club and not just the club today or next year or 3 years from now, but what's appropriate for the club 20 years from now. And I think when we look at Birmingham City, you have a club that's the name team in England's second city. This should be a top 10 Premier League club. That's the size of the club. So what's the right size for a club that scope and scale sitting in England's second city. I think it's a large venue.
I met Tom a few weeks ago, Simon, nice fella, in the Biltmore at a football finance seminar. On the same day, I bumped into Josh Wander, 777. Anyway, we'll get to that. A good guy with plenty of plans for the football club. Ambition off the pitch, the NFL, big concerts. I mean, surely that's pointless if you're not successful on the pitch.
Yes, of course. I mean, you have to get a bit of both. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having vision. There's nothing wrong with looking at the scenario of being in a part of the country where you are the second city. There's a lot of opportunity there, big population, big expectations. Birmingham City is one of those football clubs that, when it's successful, can pull upon a decent fan base. So I think all of these things are absolutely right, and that's what they should be thinking along the lines of. Right now, it trips them up because their football. This is a longer term project. If they get relegated from the Championship,
right,
it's not a disaster for them. It's just a step back. No, because they're going to have to put their hands in their pockets. The revenues between the Championship and League One are not as significant as you'd think that it would be in terms of what you can attract, because ultimately you only get about £4 million, £5 million more from the broadcasting deals in the Championship.
Simon, come on, relegated in your first year of ownership.
No, it's
I know what you'd be like. No, you'd be climbing the walls.
No, I nearly did. You know, we got out of relegation on the last game of the season. You know, I spent lots of money, probably equivalent to about 30, 40 million today on transfer fees to get to a cup semi-final against Liverpool, lose that, and then nearly get relegated and only avoid relegation by a goal in the 87th minute away to Stockport County to keep us in the division. So I know precisely what they're looking at and the reasons why they're looking at it, because they've made mistakes.
But he shouldn't be talking about eclipsing Villa at this precise time, should he?
Well, that's the association. He's basically saying that Birmingham is the second city. Their club should be pushing and punching their weight. They should be building facilities.
It should be. Yeah. But he's leaning with his chin with comments like that.
Well, of course he is, because ultimately the team is not successful on the field and they're being judged by these decisions. And when you finish it off with, look what we've done in the last 9 months, and the Birmingham City fans will say, yes, you've almost got us relegated. And they are right in it. There's a lot of twists and turns. And Birmingham and Huddersfield have got to play one another in the run-in. And both teams have games on the last game of the season that could be very meaningful. But Birmingham are playing Norwich, you're trying to get into the playoffs, and Huddersfield are playing Ipswich, you're trying to get promoted.
Simon, look at the messages. Sorry to interrupt you as you speak. Look at the messages coming in. I haven't even invited them. 8, 10, 89. No name on this one. Jim, Rooney got sacked on January the 2nd. There's been more than enough time to pick up points since then. We should have got ourselves there and then an experienced interim manager straight away when Tony Mowbray stepped down because of illness. Relegation has been a long time in coming, and it's probably deserved.
Well, relegation may well have been a long time in coming because of the various ownership models post Sullivan and Gold and the decisions that were made by these ownerships. This new ownership have compounded the problem. They can't be judged for the sins of the past. They picked up some of the bad decisions that were made, the overpayment of wages and the challenges that Birmingham had for a few years, and also the absentee landlord of an owner that was sitting in a certain situation not running it properly. We've had all these discussions with people like Ian Danter.
Yeah.
But they can be responsible for the plight of the last 12 months. The decision to appoint Rooney was a bad football decision. They haven't pivoted off it and reacted quickly enough, and the results haven't come.
Yeah.
And obviously they put Tony Mowbray in. Tony Mowbray was unwell. Gary Rowett's gone back in there. I still think they've probably got just enough in the tank to get themselves out of it. Huddersfield got smashed on, 4-1 against Preston midweek. Mm. They're their immediate rivals. Plymouth can be dragged into it. Millwall can be dragged back into it. They probably need 49 points to stay up.
I mean, there's messages coming in. Birmingham City staging NFL games. Good luck with that. How about staying in the division? Dave's an Aston Villa fan. Birmingham City are a laughingstock. They'll never be anywhere near as big as Villa. Unbelievable. Always, always, always be our poor neighbours. Football clubs benefit from American ambition?
I'm sorry, but I imagine there was a lot of Manchester United fans that laughed at Manchester City when they landed in League One. And it took a Paul Dickhoff penalty to get them out of League One, and then you've got different ownership changes. If these guys have made mistakes, which they clearly have on the football field and in conjunction with the management decisions they've made, that's why I keep on going on about Gary Cook and the decisions that he would have helped them make, because I do think it's preposterous that someone supposed to know the industry and know his way around has encouraged these guys that are learning their trade and learning the landscape to make football decisions. But their overall position, when I walked into Palace, I said similar things that it was my ambition to put Palace in the Premier League within 5 years. It was my ambition to make them the third or fourth biggest club in London. And all of those at the time would have been listening to that going, oh, yeah, really? Mm. Your club's been in administration for 18 months. You nearly got relegated last season.
Do you regret seeing all that?
No, because I put them in the Premier League within 5 years. And you have to have ambitions, you have to have visions, you have to bring people with you.
But that was about it. I mean, we you know, we didn't have Tina Turner performing there on a regular basis.
But football's changed. But
we didn't have NFL matches
but
there.
But football's matured because it is ridiculous. What other business would suggest, and football is now a business, that you have a stadium that opens once every 2 weeks and you do nothing else with it besides pay bills on it?
No, I get that. But, I mean, the clue is on the wall outside. Birmingham City Football Club, they've got to be seen to be a successful football club before any of the other... Absolutely. Stuff can start coming into play.
Absolutely right. But you sometimes in life, tragically, things don't play out the way you want them to. And sometimes you have to take one step back to take two steps forward. Nobody wants to do that. And I'm not advocating that's the blueprint you should follow.
Yeah.
Right now, Birmingham are on the field making their owners look foolish because their owners have made foolish decisions.
Right.
Now, whether their owners are going to abdicate responsibility or whether they're going to go, right, whatever comes our way, yeah. which I think they're probably going to have, probably will do, is we will be the ones that have to bankroll this. We will be the ones that have to bridge the gap for our own decisions. And I'm sorry, fans, we've let you down because the team isn't performing the way we thought it should do. And we made decisions based upon autograph hunting for Wayne Rooney. But you've got to move past just the micromanagement and low-level thinking of it's just the appointment of Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
And look at what they will build there in the end.
I get it. Do you know what? There are a few Birmingham fans going with you. Big Tony, I don't know what Little Tony's doing this morning, but Big Tony in Birmingham says, I'm not worried about Birmingham going down. It's been coming for years. The club needs a complete reset. They mean business. The only way is up from this point onwards. Manchester City went down, as Simon says, to the League One 25 years ago. Look at them now. Keep right on, says Big Tony. Good morning, Jim. I thought April Fool's Day was 10 days ago after hearing your man Wagner, says Ian, the Aston Villa fan. Villa fans out in force this morning, Simon, as you might imagine. Sid the Villa fan.
Yeah.
Biggest concerts in the world. Wow. Have they not seen the Stones in Brazil? That was the biggest concert. Enjoy League One, ladies, says Sid the Villa fan.
And as someone else pointed out, you'd have difficulty getting Tina Turner to do a concert these days.
Yes.
But I remember looking at Aston Villa's prospectus when they got relegated and what kind of state they were in. So laugh while you have the moment, Aston Villa fans. But about 4 or 5 years ago when you got relegated and I saw your business plan put together by Keith Wyness that got him very upset with me because I observed upon how unprofessionally done it was.
Yeah.
They were in a not in good nick. So, you know, everyone has their moment.
Yeah. Well, Birmingham fans seem to be split at the moment on what life would be like, what the actual moment of relegation from the Championship to League One would feel like. Many are saying, yeah, take it in the chin, get back up. It's a long-term project for Wagner and the rest
Indeed.
Of them. Many are saying, are you kidding? It would be unimaginable. Here's Sean, a Birmingham fan. Sean, good morning. What do you want to say, mate?
I'm not, to be honest, if we go... 12 months ago, if we'd have gone down, I'd have been in pure panic mode that the club wouldn't survive at all and we'd be game over, much like Bury and places like that. Having spoken to Wagner and seen Wagner in action, a question was asked by one of our podcasts, what happens if worst case scenario happens? And he said, very confidently, with his chin and his chest out, saying, nothing changes, it just costs us a bit more money.
And yeah.
Which is what I said.
If we go down, then it's horrible. We've got League One football. We don't want to be there. But I'm not as worried as I would have been 12 months ago. I think we'll get back there. And also, as we all know, it's 5 or 6 games. It's a whole season. And the team simply haven't been good enough.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're looking at it from a totally pragmatic point, Sean. That's what you said, Simon, to be fair.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't think there's any indications. Of course, the timing of what he's saying is ridiculable.
Yeah.
People are going to ridicule it. They're going to turn around and say, well, the football operation is a disaster. What are you doing talking about having your head in the clouds?
Yeah.
But they're all part of a business strategy. And as long as they're prepared to bridge the gap, which they will be, then it will be, as I say, it could be one step to take step. But I still think with Rowett in situ, they've got just enough because the other sides around them are not getting away. Huddersfield didn't get away. They got a 4-1 smashing from Preston midweek.
But they've got just enough to get out of the trouble. That's what you're about to say.
But it doesn't
matter. They were 6 when they sacked Eustace.
But fine. Palace had just about enough to get out of trouble and 2 years later we got promoted.
Right.
So you can turn these things and you can learn the lessons of adversity and they will have learned a lot from the decisions that they've made on the football operation this year.
Dale, I'm coming to you in a second. There's a message, Simon, from Shane. It's another example of American ownership being too focused on superficial things like glitz and chintzy events. events rather than the substance of building a proper football club?
No, you've got to be able to do both. I mean, you've got to be able to make...
In an ideal world.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you've got to generate revenues. Football clubs have got to generate revenues, and that's what they're all trying to do. That's what Tottenham Hotspur have done at the very top of the pyramid, and it will be replicated down, and ultimately making sure that your sophisticated thinking for the business of sport is there. But of course, everybody knows you've got to make the right decisions on the field, because that's what people look at it as. You know, they look at it and go, what a disaster, American idiots are looking at the bigger picture. Well, you have to do both.
You've got to do both, have you?
Of course,
so
you
in your
do.
Time at Palace, did you lack vision by not talking about big concerts and NFL
no,
games?
No, because that's precisely what I did do.
Right.
I talked about bringing digital... I was the first football club in the country to bring in digital season tickets that could track what people time they come in the ground, so I could match their spend to the times that we would provide service so they could get we could get more revenue from. I looked at every commercialisation of it. I built KPIs that were as good as anything in the industry to say what I'm getting from every fan, how many programmes are being bought, what shirt size of merchandise they bought, what the stadium should be configured into. I spent £500,000 straight away on lounges to try and make sure that people spent more money. But you do have to be getting the fundamentals right, which is the football team. You buy a football club, you've got to have a football team that performs.
What was the biggest concert you ever staged?
We didn't do any.
Oh, you didn't do any. Okay,
no.
So that went in its face. Dale's a big Birmingham fan. Dale, good morning. What do you want to say about the plight of your football club?
Morning, Jim. Morning, Simon. First-time caller.
Morning, Dale. You're welcome.
Just want to say, I watched the open house live on Blues TV on Tuesday. When these guys come in, we didn't even have hot water in the in the stadium, let alone be now what we are now, where we are, other than the teams in the who have come down from Premier League, we are the biggest revenue stream from the teams without parachute payments. They also projected next season that we were going to be breaking teams with parachute payments. That's absolutely massive for any championship club to be breaking teams with parachute payments.
Sure.
So that what they've done off the field is immaculate. On the field, it hasn't been great. We get it. Mistakes, obviously. What I will say about the John Eustace sacking, if we didn't win against Huddersfield and West Brom, I think it was, on that week, we were down in 14th anyway. 6 points took us to sixth, and results went our way on the we played on Friday.
Yeah.
Results
but,
went our way on the
But
Saturday.
Dale, Tom Wagner's talking about you in time eclipsing Villa. If you drop down to League One, Villa right now, as you and I talk, on Live and Talk Sport, Villa are fifth in the Premier League. Eclipsing Villa.
Jim, I weren't even born the last time Villa really won a trophy. I was there at Wembley in 2011 with Abba Femi Martins. I've seen my team win a trophy. There's a generation of Villa that haven't seen them win a trophy at Wembley.
Okay, Dale, listen, thanks for that. Thank you for that. Paul, finish this off for me. Good morning.
Good morning. I come in late on the conversation. Susan did get older. I went last night. I think there's a strong possibility we could go down this year. But like the other callers, I'm not as worried as I would have been, because I think we've got the best owners we've had in my lifetime. They've got a vision for the club, and I think everybody's signed up to it. You can feel the vibe around the place. It's so much better and positive. And I think, you know, we might have a blip in the road, but the only way is up. And to be honest, I don't really care about the Villa. You know, I don't care what they think or what they say. Yeah, we are Birmingham soon.
Excellent, Paul. Good call. Thank you for that. So Birmingham have got it all to do, but they know that, Simon. They know that. That's the task in hand. And it all starts again this weekend. Birmingham at home to Coventry. And the bookies make Coventry to win at St Andrews. They have it all to do. But with Gary Rowett, you've got a right chance.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Download, stand well back, listen. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
At the moment, we're dwelling on the fixture that cannot seemingly get played. Dundee against Rangers in the Scottish Premier League. Rangers missed a chance to leapfrog Celtic at the top of the Scottish Premiership after the game at Dens Park Dundee last night was called off for a second time due to rain. Rangers called out Dundee as negligent and unprofessional. But have they got any right to do that? Because it's now transpired that Rangers could have gone ahead and played the rearranged game last midweek, the first available date. But with the game against Celtic on the horizon, i.e. on Sunday, there, a request was made to the SPFL board to push the game back by a week. They did, but they couldn't play it last night. Now it's going to be played, hopefully, next week on a dry day. But we'll see. Dundee agreed and the league had no objection, but it's Rangers who are kicking up a stink about it. Many calls on this. David's a big Rangers fan. David, good morning. Were you due to head to Dens Park yourself?
No, Jim, I'm a big fan, but I live down in Kent, mate. what it is, I'm a lifelong fan, basically. My father's from Govan, so I go up quite regular.
All but, right.
I wanted to make a point, Jim, that this thing about Rangers with Celtic, the 5% allocation now has been agreed for next season for
allocation.
So, saying that we're not doing anything to actually resolve that is not correct.
It took four years to do it.
Yeah, it's taken a long time, David.
Yeah, it might have done, but the fact is, the Rangers Supporters Association were never willing to give the hold of the Brunans fan back to Celtic supporters, and that's not going to happen. Bisgrove has basically said that, so... You know, it took some time to negotiate, but there we are.
Yeah, but that's another issue, again, David. And as you rightly say, to a degree, it's been resolved, and some Rangers fans will get to Celtic Park, and some Celtic fans will get to Ibrox. That's been taken care of. But on the subject of this Dundee Rangers game, was there any need for Rangers to be quite so heavy-handed in terms of the wording of their statement yesterday? Rangers expects the SPFL to take proportionate and decisive action in accordance with its rules.
Yeah, I think the thing is, if the game, it's okay, say, push the game back the next week, casually, but if the pitch is still wobbling next week, you've got to remember the split this weekend is the finish of the game. So
Why didn't you play it last week then? It didn't suit Rangers to play it last week.
Well, that's the case of any team before a big game, isn't it?
But then you take the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, don't you? I mean, for Rangers to be up on their high horse and to be writing this email or this letter or this statement seems to be a little bit rich. And I know you make the point, and you're right to make the point, because we already knew that there was a resolution, a minimum resolution of 5%. But for the last 4 years, both Rangers and Celtic have acted in a way which is not becoming of two leading lights in world football.
Yeah.
And I also watched the ownership model of Rangers, you know, having problems with even the league's sponsorship because it didn't suit the ownership, because the guy that owned Rangers, Douglas Park, had a car dealership. So let's have it right. Yeah, you're either a big football club or you're not.
That's in the rule about conflict of interest. The SPFL, Neil Doncaster knew that that was a conflict of interest, basically, and in the end they agreed not to put us on any of the Cinch logos or
It's small-minded thinking. It's small-minded thinking. You're taking the commercial interests of an owner over the well-being of a football club and the league.
It was a rubbish deal as well. It was a poor deal. Okay, well, that's
an opinion. But what you're doing is you're just basically saying is everybody else is crap and Rangers are great.
David, listen, thanks for the call. Here's John, a Dundee fan. John, what do you think of all this? I mean, it now appears a game could well get played next week, although that's not definite either. What's your take on it, John?
Jim, thanks very much for answering the call. I've got a lot of time for you and Simon. Watch your show a lot.
I feel like
Rangers have got a lot to say about this in depth at the moment. Rangers fans, as you're going aware, and Celtic fans, and you, they're always got to say that. I think they act like they own the league and own the SFA. They've always got an opinion on everybody else's club when they kind of need to focus on their self, really. What I would say on regards to that is we need to more focus on our pitch more than new stadium. Everything just keeps talked about the new stadium at the moment. I don't know if you've heard about that, but that's all we seem to talk about. Our stadium's neglected from start to finish in the stands, so there's a lot that needs to go on that. But I feel like because we're playing Rangers, it's been announced more in the press. If it was we were playing Motherwell, St Mirren, it wouldn't be getting that much coverage. But
sure,
because it's Rangers, that's the reason why it's now everyone's looking at for a bigger picture.
Yeah, I mean, I feel for Dundee, John, to a degree, because they couldn't have played the game. If the pitch was unplayable last night, it was unplayable, John. And they couldn't play the match, simple as.
Yeah, I mean, the club, from my understanding, have had a lot of work done to it and tried the best to get it on. Regards to all these these people that have got all these ideas in their heads, just like the old COVID days, it's quite funny, to be honest, to see it.
But John, does your club have to answer some questions though about the number of games that have been cancelled because of the inability for the pitch to be in a condition to play on? Is that a fair observation?
Oh, 100%. I'm not saying anything about like the club's not at fault. The club's at fault, 100%. This isn't taken away from that. That five games this season is a shambles, you know. But this is what I'm going back to, the new stadium. The new stadium seems to be the main priority at the moment. There's something from our hierarchy that needs to get looked at. So that's up to them to do. But with regards to the public demeanour of the situation, it's more focused on now that our club is in the light just because of the situation. If it happened to any, as I said, any other club that we're playing against, it wouldn't be the same scenario. We wouldn't be getting looked at. But Rangers, obviously, and Celtic have always said that it's to act like they own Scottish football. You know, if they weren't here, Scottish football would be nothing in all this. I would send them down to England to play in England. I know you were speaking about that yesterday. I would happily see them go down there. You know, they cause more ball than what it's worth.
Okay, John, listen, thanks for the call. Mark's a Celtic fan who wants his say. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing?
Good, thank you, mate. What's your take on this? The game that seemingly can't get played, Mark?
Well, let's pick up something Simon said. Simon said who the Rangers think they are. Well, I'll tell you who they think they are. They are the establishment club of Scotland. Their sense of entitlement knows no bounds. And just to correct something else he said as well, you know, he felt they were harshly dealt with when they went bust and put down the leagues. Scottish football actually rewrote the whole constitution in order to protect Rangers. They came up with a five-way agreement which didn't exist. Under the old rules, Rangers would have ceased to exist. They would have started as a brand new club with all their history extinct. But they rewrote the whole pyramid of Scottish football to ensure that didn't happen, such as their entitlement and establishment leanings.
All right. Well, here's a pertinent question for you, Mark. What's the weather going to be like in Dundee next Wednesday?
Well, it's sunny in Glasgow today, which is a one-off, I can assure you, because it's been absolutely belting it down for about 3 months.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it's going to be any better. Why they don't just play it at Tannadice is beyond me, quite frankly. But
I agree with you, mate. I agree. It does seem that at some stage, Mark, the game will get played. It's as simple as. But if they couldn't play it last night, they couldn't play it last night. I mean, that's...
Well, indeed, and the fact that Rangers could have played it last week and chose not to, and are now writing these, another one of their famous statements. I mean, they throw these statements flying out confetti.
Yeah, yeah.
And just one more final point as well, just something else Simon picked up on there. Obviously, the Cinch car deal upset Rangers, and they refused to have Cinch all over their stadium, etc. But they were quite happy when Ladbrokes was sponsoring the league and they'd bet 32, I believe it was, on their shirts. The difference being here that Douglas Park has nothing to do with Bet 32. It's self-interest. This is what this club is all about.
Okay, Mark.
Self-interest and protecting themselves.
Listen, thanks for your call. We're getting away a bit from the weather right now in Tayside. Sean, finish this for me. Sean is a Rangers fan. Good morning.
Hi there, Jim. Hi there, Simon. Thanks for taking my call this morning.
No problem.
So now, basically, I've had to travel twice now up to Dundee and obviously back again. Obviously, yesterday I was able to turn the car back around, but it's obviously to do with the fans as well. The fans are obviously travelling and they're not obviously being taken care of. Now, this is twice now that Dundee have called off their game. This has happened several times throughout the season. It's got nothing to do with the weather. It's to do with their drainage system on the pitch. In fact, they can't get their house in order. So basically, the way I look at it is it's gross negligence from Dundee. This is now twice it's happened, and yeah, I would like to obviously put the point across that it's not a case of just about the fixture list, but there's other clubs coming out and complaining about this as well.
Yeah. Where were you travelling from, Shauna?
I'm travelling from Glasgow all the way up to Dundee to do some media work, and that's now we've had to travel all the way up to Dundee. When we got up to Dundee, the game was called off. I think there's fans that have travelled all over. And basically, Dundee have come out and blamed climate change when you've got the pitch 250 yards across the road that's playable. Amateur football has been played as well. So I think the Rangers are quite right to bring out their statement. Mm. This is a pivotal time of the year where all these games are getting played. Obviously, we're now going into the split, as you know, Jim. Yeah. We're going into the split this weekend. So there's
but Shauna, they could have played it last week.
They couldn't have because Sky intervened.
Because
it was live on TV. Sky intervened because it was live on TV. So basically, Dundee wanted the game to be played at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but this was actually rejected by Sky.
The plot thickens, Shauna. Shauna, if it is next Wednesday and it's dry, God willing, will you go?
Oh yeah, obviously I definitely will be there. Obviously I go to the Rangers home and away games, but I just think this is now taking a step too far. The amount of times that Dundee have had their games called off this season, it's a case of the pitch is just not fit for purpose and neither is the club, because it's nothing to do with the weather, it's to do with their drainage system.
Okay. Shauna, listen, thanks for your call, thanks for your time.
She's probably right.
Yeah.
But I just think the nature of the way that Rangers have attacked the subject is the question that we're debating here. Hmm. I don't think there's any debate that having five games cancelled is in some part illustrating that you're not fit for purpose.
The world's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Reports that 777 Partners has told stakeholders, including the Premier League and prospective lenders, that it now expects its takeover of Everton to be finalised after the season is over. City sources said Wednesday that 777 have also requested in recent days an extension to a repayment deadline for a loan of nearly 160 million quid. The money is owed to MSP Capital, Merseyside businessman Andy Bell and George Downey. The money was due to be repaid by next Monday. I mean, with each passing week, I think the question now is it becoming clear that 777 Partners don't have the funds to buy Everton? There was seemingly just, about 4 weeks ago in central London, I managed to get in front of this man, Josh Wander of 777 Partners. And he said, yeah, I'll give you a brief message to Everton fans.
I can't tell them anything yet because the Premier League has suggested that we don't litigate this in the public. It's prudent for us not to speak, but once the deal is approved, I'm happy to speak to you.
And are you confident it will be approved?
I am.
So he was confident then, he probably still is now.
Yeah.
At what point, Simon, did the Premier League say no and Mashiri looks at alternative options?
When they don't feel that the requirements that they're putting upon 7-7 can be met. I mean, look, 7-7-7 will probably run around and find the money. And that money will be debt. And that money will be loaded into Everton and will have to be serviced.
I mean, that sounds alarming in itself. They'll run around and find the money.
Well, look, I mean, I think their business plan is flawed. I think that Everton is a football club that cannot survive on debt. It cannot be a leverage purchase. You know, it cannot be one of the only football clubs in the world that could have done this was Manchester United, and they've done it, and the Glazers have done very well out of it. The team is going for a cyclical period where it doesn't win anything. The business model, I wouldn't be surprised if it does get completed. I don't think it's a great thing. And I think it's flawed because Everton, in order to progress, whatever happens to the team on the field, they must build that stadium. Right? That stadium must be built because at some point Everton will be able to assume their position back in that stadium and build opportunities around it and the opportunities to generate significant revenues. And some of the guys involved, George Downing, I've known for years. You know, George's business is private and he would want to try and keep it as private as possible. But I'm pretty sure any money that he would have put into Everton was to help the football club and to perhaps ensure things like the stadium are progressing, because I think they're a very important thing. But that's my assumption. That's not something I know to be the case. But you look at 777, you look at yourself and say, well, how this football club needs capital injection, not debt injection, because it doesn't have positive cash flow and it's not likely to have positive cash flow. So if it hasn't got positive cash flow, how is this of a benefit to the owners of the football club and their model coming in? And I think that in the next 3 years, Everton could find themselves in a difficult position with these guys because they're borrowing money, they're trying to recreate their own portfolio of assets, which means they can borrow money cheaper if they've got a blue chip Premier League football club, irrespective of whether they're finishing fourth and bottom of the league. The Premier League is the wrapper that everyone wants to be involved in. So I've never liked it. I've never liked it from the outset. I've never liked the construction of the deal. And at what point can the Premier League say no? Well, Mashiri owns the football club, and Mashiri will be pushing the Premier League to observe their rules and to make sure that they do nothing more than observe their rules. And they kept the Newcastle deal alive. And despite all the ridiculous protestations of the Newcastle fans, because I said it's deader than a dead thing from Deadland, the only reason that deal got done is because Newcastle's owners, in part, copped to piracy. And once that had been copped to, there was no reason why the Premier League would be having any problems with their ownership, because there wouldn't be piracy going on anymore, right? Because you can't have piracy. Right. You can't have an ownership model that is in part state-sanctioning piracy, which was what was going on in Saudi when BOUTQ were broadcasting BN Signal. That's a fact, whether Newcastle fans want to believe it or not.
Should Evertonians want 777 Partners to get the deal done? Should they want it?
Well, I don't think so, no, but it depends what other games in town are going to manifest themselves. They should want rid of Mashiri because I think he's been a pathetic owner. I think the fact that I do have a great deal of respect for Bill Kenwright, a great deal of affection for him, but the management team that was assembled at Everton wasn't good enough. The level of staffing that's gone from one level to another from a business that couldn't cater for it was probably wrong. So there are a lot of the engine, but Mashiri was on top of that and he allowed those management decisions to be made. So the answer to your question is you've got to get rid of Mashiri, because Mashiri, despite spending 500 million quid of whose money, he says his, some people might say other people's, has made Everton into a very poorly run football club, a very poorly thought-through football club, and has taken it back a few years. Now, are 777 jumping out of the frying pan into the fire? Yes, because I think their business model is flawed. These are not stupid guys. These are not fools, these guys. But the principle of trying to buy a football club that has got to service some debt with a cash flow that doesn't look like it can support it means there's a problem coming.
Exactly.
And if they're going to, and of course they're going to suggest they're going to recategorise their borrowing criteria left, right and centre, which means money might become cheaper in other football clubs that they own and their asset pool becomes bigger because Everton provides a different feel and look to what their overall portfolio looks like. But I still think it's flawed. But I also think that Everton, whatever happens, Everton football team, if they were to get relegated this year, which I don't think they will, this stadium that they are building must be built. Because I think it's a gateway. I think it's a wonderful thing for the city of Liverpool. And I also think it's a gateway for Everton to give themselves huge opportunities for when they do get effective and proper ownership.
Well, Josh Wander of 777, brief as he was, told me, and you heard it, that he feels it will get done. You still feel it'll get done. But they've got to demonstrate it's got access to sufficient funding to complete the construction of the new stadium at Bramley Moor Dock.
Yes.
And that's a massive backstory in all of this.
But funding a stadium, I mean, Daniel Levy, with due respect, was able to find 700, 800, 900 million to fund Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So the funding requirements for a stadium that's going to be a revenue generator, that's going to increase your revenues, probably isn't really the issue. That's not an issue. Meeting certain obligations and making sure that the developers that you're working with have been paid to keep you on track so you don't lose this project is probably quite important.
Yeah.
And that might explain some of the monies that have been put into the football club via different guises, possibly. But the point is that Everton and 777 is a mix that may well come out of the ether, but I'm not sure it's the best one for Everton in the longer game.
Danger. Flammable exchanges ahead. Outspoken with White and Jordan from the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Just over 1 month away from the undisputed fight between Alexander Usyk and Tyson Fury. It is now the 18th of May for this, of course, in Saudi Arabia. But Fury has been talking about it. The great and the good gathered in Morecambe yesterday, not Simon or myself, as Tyson Fury addressed an audience and said, yeah, Usyk's got it coming.
When the cruiserweights step up to the big boys, usually they get found wanting. And even the greatest cruiserweights that's ever lived, Evander Holyfield, when he stepped up to the big boys in Big Daddy Bone Lennox Lewis, he was found wanting. Size really matters. And we have weight divisions for a reason. Even if you look at David Haye, he was an explosive, good cruiserweight and good heavyweight. But when he stepped up to the big boy in Klitschko, it wasn't really a contest. Let's use Johnny Nelson, for instance, undefeated cruiserweight when he was cruiserweight. But every time he stepped up heavyweight, he got bashed.
So there we are. I mean, we heard him in full flow there. Has he got a point, Spence, when he steps up, size makes difference?
Well, listen, I think in this case with Alexander Usyk, he may well have a point, because I do think that size will be the difference in that fight, because I think that the boxing IQ of Tyson Fury probably wins him the fight, you know, and the size will be a massive part of that. But if you're looking at the history of the sport and you're talking about the likes of Evander Holyfield, I mean, Evander Holyfield, he did beat Riddick Bowe. He did beat Mike Tyson. He beat the generational greats of that time. You know, even David Haye, he stepped up when he boxed for that world heavyweight title. We beat Valuev, you know, a 7 foot giant. So I'm not so sure about the when they step up, they get found wanting. I think that there are cruiserweights in the past that have stepped up to heavyweight and been very successful. Alexander Usyk is a great you know, example of a guy stepping up. He's grown into it. 3 years he's been a heavyweight now. Yes, he's only had 6 fights, but he looks better than ever.
What's your take on it, Simon? Fury sounds extremely confident, as you'd expect.
Yeah.
And he says, it's mine, it's all about me, I'm the man to beat, and he's not big enough to beat me. That's basically what he's saying. He doesn't have the physique, the height, whatever, to beat me.
I think conventional wisdom will say that's probably right. If Tyson Fury turns up as the Tyson Fury that we've seen in the past, and the performance he's put on against Deontay Wilder, he'll beat Alexander Usyk. If he doesn't, and he resembles more like the fighter that fought Francis Ngannou, then he'll find himself in trouble. It's going to be a fascinating fight, because you look at what people perceive as a decline in Fury. People are starting to look at him and saying he fights now in a certain way because he can't do certain things anymore. He can't move like he once did because his knees and his ankles are coming under duress. And so he's meeting fire with fire because he's been forced to do that. And ultimately, you've seen Alexander Usyk going in against, you know, Anthony Joshua. What I mean, Anthony Joshua is a world-class fighter. He may not be the best fighter in the heavyweight division, but he's a world-class fighter and a heavy-handed world-class fighter and a two-time world champion. So he's been in with some of the elite.
Yeah.
So I think the questions that he's asking of Alexander Usyk are more about making sure it's a Tyson Fury show.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah. We don't need a history lesson, Tyson, because your history is not right.
I mean,
But I still think the conventional wisdom, if I think Tyson Fury wins the fight, I always have done.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think, you know, you're talking about heavyweights as well. He beat Daniel Dubois as well, who's very heavy-handed, very explosive. So he's proved that he can deal with the power of a heavyweight as well. So, yeah, I'm with Simon. I think it's a fascinating fight, you know, because we don't quite know who's going to turn up what Tyson Fury is going to turn up. Right. On May the 18th.
But when you look at Usyk, if he finds a way of doing it, Spencer, can we consider him as one of the greatest ever heavyweights after only 6 fights in that weight clash?
Well, we can consider him a generational great, that's for sure. When you're talking about all-time greats, you know, you're looking in the history of the sport of boxing, in Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, but they had other dance partners to make them an all-time great. You know, Lennox Lewis, yeah, you go, you know, there's a stream of heavyweights. So I think that there's more chapters to be done, I think, for Alexander Usyk. Yes, if he becomes an undisputed world heavyweight champion, he's definitely a generational great, but all-time great, I think there's still more to go.
Would victory propel Usyk, though, Simon, on a level with the man that Spence just mentioned there, the last undisputed Lennox Lewis, and past the likes of Mike Tyson?
No, it put them in the conversation. I don't think it'd propel them past them, because I think Tyson and what he did to the heavyweight division in 1986 onwards was remarkable. Mm-hmm. And the way that he decimated it at 21 years of age, and beat everyone and all of them until he arrived at a point in his career where other things outside the ring changed the direction of travel and he became a shadow of himself.
But Mike Tyson didn't become undisputed champion. Fellow would.
Yeah, Mike Tyson was undisputed champion.
Yeah, he was undisputed.
Undisputed heavyweight. Trevor Burbick, 1986.
By beating Michael Spinks, I think he got all the belts that were available.
Yeah,
I think that was the fight that Trump in the end made, didn't he, in Atlantic City or wherever it was.
Yeah.
So, but Tyson and Lennox Lewis are different generations. I think ultimately Usyk and Fury present an opportunity to put themselves into a conversation about the history books. But what we've got is a brilliant, intriguing fight. Usyk is a brilliant technician. The questions abound about whether he can deal with a fella of Fury's stature and size. I think Fury is a very clever operator. I'm not a huge admirer of his personality over the last 12 months, but I'm a huge admirer of his abilities, and I think he will be the best version of himself.
Yeah.
I think he'll go in and do his Lazarus trick again, which is, you thought I was all done, you thought I was out, here I am again, and he'll do what he does.
Lots of messages coming in, Spencer. There's one. Hi, guys, listen to you every week. Tyson's boxing IQ is inferior to Usyk's. That's Usyk's advantage here. It's much closer than any of you lot think.
Absolutely. Listen, we're not saying it's not close, you know, because we won't know until that first bell rings. We're all going to have an opinion. What I'm saying is Tyson Fury has a great boxing IQ as well. He's very good. He's good on the back foot. He's good on the front foot. He knows how to, you know, he knows how to control the ring and the space. And I think that's important for him going into a fight with Usyk, because Usyk is the master. Yes, he's the technician. But we also see some fragility about Alexander Usyk as well. We saw that against Daniel Dubois. There were times where you go, he looks a little fragile, and that might be his undoing, because Tyson Fury is very good. Look, Fury can box on the front foot, back foot, but he don't mind having a fight, Fury, and that's where he's going to try and take Usyk. He's going to try and cut that ring off.
But I don't think Fury is as heavy-handed as Daniel Dubois.
No, definitely not. No, but he's
really?
He's a huge man, and he'll know how to use that weight, and he'll know how to
and he'll lay
tie
on him, and lean on him.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
The world's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan from the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.